Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jimmy Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Debt ceiling negotiations continue in Washington as President Obama and congressional leaders meet today at the White House. This week, a lesser-known provision in the Constitution is gaining recent fame in relation to the debt ceiling. Again, the first line of Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, which says, in relevant part, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. You've probably been hearing that over the course of the last week because it's been raising questions about the powers implied by the 14th Amendment. Yesterday, at his Twitter town hall meeting, the president was asked if he would invoke the 14th and declare that the debt ceiling is unconstitutional. He sidestepped the question, but at least one congressional Republican is dismissive of the idea that the president could use the 14th Amendment as an end run around Congress on the debt ceiling issue. Here is Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn on Fox News Sunday this past weekend when asked about the 14th Amendment and its potential role.
That's crazy talk. It's not acceptable for Congress and the president not to do their job and to say somehow the president has the authority to then basically do this by himself.
Well, that's what Cornyn thinks. But can President Obama tell the Treasury Department to borrow money over the $14.29 trillion debt ceiling by claiming the authority of Section 4 of the 14th Amendment? Listeners, you can go to our politics website, It's a Free Country, and read the explainer on the 14th Amendment. But with me now to hash it out is Jay Wexler. He's a law professor at Boston University and author of the forthcoming The Odd Clause, Understanding the Constitution Through 10 of Its Most Curious Provisions. Professor Wexler, welcome to WNYC.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to admit that the law geek in me is very excited about your new book.
Oh, good. Excellent.
I probably shouldn't admit that on the radio. I should just tell you that privately. But let's dive right into this one because you're the perfect guest for it. Tell us what Section 4 of the 14th Amendment was originally intended to do. Give us a little history.
Right. It was originally it's part of the post-Civil War amendment. So it was enacted by Northern senators and representatives, drafted by them, in order to make sure that when the Southern Democrats got back into Congress, they couldn't repudiate the debts that were incurred by the Union during the Civil War.
So
that's the original purpose.
That's the original purpose, but it's clear language currently in the Constitution. What does the amendment mean by, quote, public debt? It says, just for our listeners who may not have run to their computers and pulled it up or their hardbound text of the Constitution, the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned. So what's public debt, Professor?
Well, I should say at the outset that nobody knows really what this provision means currently. I mean, nobody's probably looked at it since 1868. Very few people, anyways. So we don't know what public debt means. It probably means something like a debt that the United States is obligated to pay back. Like bonds the Treasury Department has issued. It probably includes legally required kind of entitlements like pensions, things that the government has agreed to pay, and that the right to receive those payments is vested somehow. But we don't know. We don't know. Is Social Security included? Probably not, but we're not sure. We just don't know. It's not like there's the line of Section 4 cases that tells us what public debt means. So we don't know. Nor do we know what the phrase shall not be questioned
How
means.
Did you know that I was just about to ask you that question? It's weird language.
It's great, isn't it? It's in the passive voice, which doesn't seem to be a very good way to draft a constitutional provision. I don't have any idea really what it means. What if I said right here on the radio that I question the public debt, the validity of the public debt? Have I violated the Constitution? I hope not. But
all right. Well, let's say, even though the language is a bit odd, it's there. So let's dig into it anyway. Does in your view, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment give the president the authority to ignore this debt ceiling?
Well, with the caveat that it's all unclear, nobody really knows. My best reading of the provision is that it does not give the president the authority to exceed the debt ceiling, because it's not a grant of power to the president to do anything. The only grant of power that's in the Constitution with regard to debt is in Article 1, Section 8, which gives Congress the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And Congress has delegated its power to do that to the president, like it delegates much of its powers under the Constitution. It delegates it to the executive branch or executive agencies. And one of those delegations is to the president and the Secretary of Treasury to issue debt. But that delegation is subject to a limit, the debt limit of $14.3 trillion. And so the president has the authority that Congress has delegated to him, but no more than that. So the debt limit is a constraint on the president's power to raise, to issue debt. And there's no authority for him to go around that. Section 4 does not say the president shall have the power to issue debt in order to ensure that the public debt shall be paid. So I don't think that Section 4 gives the president any power to issue debt above the debt limit.
Now it kind of leads to a side question about the Treasury Department. Why is the Treasury Department under the executive branch?
Well, it's a complicated issue about administrative agencies and what branch they're in. The Treasury Department, is probably you can say the Treasury Department is in the executive branch because the president not only appoints the Secretary of the Treasury, but also has the power to remove the Secretary of Treasury. That's probably what makes the Treasury Department part of the executive branch. It's an interesting thing about the Constitution that people assume that executive agencies like the Treasury Department or the EPA or the FCC are executive branch agencies, but it's not like the Constitution says the executive branch shall include these various agencies and lists them or anything. Agencies exist in a really weird constitutional never-never land, especially independent agencies, which are the ones that the president can't remove the head of. But the Treasury Department as agencies go, it is as in the executive branch as pretty much anything can be, because it's the Treasury Secretary is so close to the president can remove the Treasury Secretary at will. So I guess that's why we think the Treasury Department is in the executive branch.
But wouldn't it be as convenient to have the Treasury under congressional authority?
Well, except, I mean, it would be convenient if Congress, as it used to do before World War I,
right,
were itself determine what debts to issue and what debts not to issue, and through statute, through laws, which would be signed by the president. So that's how it used to be,
mm-hmm.
And I think that Congress at that point decided that it would be more convenient from its perspective and maybe politically beneficial in other ways to kind of punt this decision-making authority to the president and the Secretary of Treasury. Whether it would ever go back to the original arrangement that it had before the World War I, I doubt it.
Yeah, there's a lot of punting that goes on.
That's really, really that's the kind of message of kind of separation of powers.
So getting back to the debt limit,
yes.
Is the debt limit in itself unconstitutional?
Well, I don't think so. I don't see why it would be, because Congress, it's not as though Congress has limited its own authority to increase, to issue debt. It's only limited the president's authority to issue new debt. If Congress goes and passes a law that says we're going to issue new debt, then that statute would trump the debt limit. I mean, the debt limit doesn't even apply to Congress. It only applies to the president. So there's nothing unconstitutional about the debt limit itself at all, I don't think. It plays a minor role. All it does is limit the president's authority to issue debt. It doesn't limit the government's authority to issue debt.
Now, let's imagine that President Obama, let's just imagine that he disagrees with your legal analysis.
Can you imagine?
And decides, okay, I'm claiming Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. I'm going to assert that, and I'm going to tell Treasury Secretary Geithner to borrow above the $14 trillion debt ceiling. Are we going to end up in court over this? I mean, how do you get to court? Who's suing who?
Yeah, that will be really interesting to see. I hope it doesn't come to that. But
he said yesterday, to be fair to President Obama, that he doesn't want to get there and he doesn't even want to consider a constitutional analysis at this point. But let's, because we're lawyers and we love hypotheticals,
yes.
Let's go there.
Oh, I love them. Yes. Right. So the president tells the Treasury Secretary to do it. There's a real issue about whether anybody could sue and to challenge that decision, because mostly the conservative justices have placed strong limits on what plaintiffs can come into court to challenge decisions like this. And it's not just anybody who could come in and claim that this is unconstitutional, just as a general matter. It has to be somebody who is directly injured by the decision. That's the standing doctrine of the Supreme Court, which is not a pretty doctrine, but there it is. And so it would have to be somebody directly harmed. And it's hard to see who would be directly harmed if the president were to simply issue new debt to pay old debt. There's some speculation in the internet that the only people who could possibly challenge it would be people who have owned financial instruments, which are basically shorted the U.S. government and who would make money if the government defaulted. Those are the people who could bring the lawsuit, who would not be, of course, your most favorite plaintiff.
Sympathetic.
Sympathetic, exactly.
The unsympathetic plaintiff.
Yeah,
what about Congress? Could Congress sue?
Well, that's another tricky thing, because there's a 1997 case which says that subgroups of Congress generally cannot sue to challenge kind of an infringement on their congressional authority. It has to be probably a majority of both houses passing a joint resolution, which is something that won't happen given the Democratic majority in the Senate. So it's unlikely. I mean, maybe the House of Representatives can try to sue, and I think that's an unclear issue, but I think what I've read anyways is that most people think that 1997 opinion I referred to before would stop the House of Representatives by itself from suing.
Is this clause, Professor Wexler, in your book, The Odd Clause?
It's not in the odd clauses, unfortunately.
You need to have another book.
Yes, right. There are so many
follow-up
odd clauses.
Book.
There could be a sequel.
We will be looking for your sequel. But in the meantime, our listeners can look for The Odd Clause, Understanding the Constitution Through 10 of Its Most Curious Provisions. And I guess we'll have to have you come back to talk about those 10, since today you were with us to talk about this one odd clause, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. Thank you so much.
That.
Oh, and I understand, I'm told, that you are coming back. So that's wonderful to hear, Jay Wexler. Thank you so much for being with us today to help us on this one clause.
Thank you very much.
And that was Jay Wexler, and he is a law professor at Boston University. Coming up next, Arun Venugopal will talk with us about the new migration to the Old South. Stay with us.